Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Lobby.
Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hello, horror hounds, and welcome to Now Slaying, an It Slays podcast production where we break down the latest and greatest in the world of horror. I'm your not-so-humble host, Colton.
I'm Rowan.
And today on the show, we're going to be reviewing a big one. It's time for Scream 6, which was released March 10th, 2023, exclusively in theaters. But before we get to the discussion, we actually reviewed Scream 2022 on the main show. And you guys reviewed Scream 1996 for your two-year anniversary before I joined the show.
So
some of our listeners may already know where yourself and I stand on the franchise. But in case they missed those episodes, Rowan, what are your thoughts on the Scream franchise as a whole? And based on those thoughts, were you looking forward to Scream 6?
So I'm ready to get braided in the streets again.
Oh, no.
I think I
did
said
I set you up?
Yeah, I think I said when we did the review on the main show for the first one from 96. Mm-hmm. I said I was never a huge Scream guy. Like, I'd seen it, I liked it, but I never went out in the theater and like made sure to see them whenever they came out. I wasn't renting it when the day it dropped. I just kind of, when I saw them, I saw them. It just wasn't up there for horror franchises with me. I don't know if much has changed on that since kind of this reinvigoration of it. When we reviewed the first one, I think we unanimously slayed that one. It is very good. There's a reason.
Yeah, and you're talking about the 1996
one,
the first one. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, it is a great one, but I can't say that I revisit all the other ones, like, all the time. But, yeah, I think that was all your questions.
Well, were you looking forward to the new one?
Well, this one, I was, because we, like you said, we reviewed 5 or Scream 2022.
Yeah.
And I feel like I was the highest one on it, on that episode.
I actually just listened to it, just to make sure.
Yeah.
Mike gave it a slay. You gave it a strong yay, and
yeah.
I gave it an okay. So almost the highest on it, yeah.
Right. It's been a little bit since I rewatched. I've seen it like once or twice since I saw it in the theater. Like, I went out and bought it when it came out, and I was a fan of that one. So I was very interested in seeing this. I probably stated on that episode, like, I'm a pretty big fan of the directors and stuff. I liked their indie work, so I am always interested in what they're doing. What about you? What are your feelings on the franchise? How do you feel? Were you excited for this one? For people that wouldn't know.
Yeah, so apologies if I'm also like repeating myself, but yeah, I've seen all the Scream movies, but really only truly enjoyed the first one from 1996. To be fair, it's been a long time since I've seen Scream 2 through 4. But I've not had too much of a pull to like go back and revisit them, similar to yourself. Also, as I mentioned on the main show, it was a bit of a hot take that I gave the 2022 one only an okay. So honestly, I wasn't really looking forward to this one too much. Like, I didn't avoid reviews or trailers or anything like that, like I usually do when I'm very much looking forward to a movie. But what did get me excited for this was the buzz when the social media embargo lifted, because some of the critics I follow and generally agree with wound up very much enjoying this one. And that, coupled with Jenna Ortega's growing star power, made me hopefully, made me kind of hope that they would make her a main character in this one, which also got me marginally more excited to check out. And so was that excitement warranted? Before I get into that, I think we should just throw it on over to the trailer.
He followed us here.
So what do we do now?
This isn't like any other ghost face.
Bang you! Come on, mother!
It's for you.
Hello, Gail.
Scream, only in theaters March 10th.
What you just heard is from Scream 6, directed by Matt Bettinelli-Olpin and Tyler Gillett, and written by James Vanderbilt and Guy Busick. and the story is as follows. Following the latest string of Ghostface killings, four survivors leave Woodsboro behind for a fresh start in New York City. But it isn't long before a new Ghostface killer appears, bringing with it some big carnage to the Big Apple. Now, here on Now Slang, we like to keep things relatively spoiler-free up front before getting into the more in-depth spoiler-filled discussion. So, Rowan, what are your spoiler-free thoughts on Scream 6?
All right, so we'll get into it. You know what? I figure we'll start it off with the story. I was gonna discuss, so I did do, I know Colton didn't, I did the 3D fan event that I guess they did all over Canada.
Yeah, I think so.
So I figured, you know, because a lot of people I would suspect are going to see this over the weekend and the coming week. So you might be saying to yourself, like, what, you know, did I miss out on the greatest night of my life or the greatest supper time? Because it started at, I think, 5 o'clock everywhere. So
they were wining and dining you.
Yeah. So I figured I'd talk about that because I've never done one of these. I think this is the first one they've ever done in Nova Scotia for any movie like this. So we went, let me just tell you right away, you didn't really miss anything. We got a poster, which is just, it's a great poster, but it's a poster that's been used for promotional purposes for this movie already.
And it's a smaller one, right? Like it's the 11 by 17.
It's the 11 by 17, yeah. Which is actually my preference. Known fact, I prefer the littler posters. But so that was cool. And of course, you know, Cineplex has, you know, I don't know what it's like in the States, but they have like large collector's cups that always are designed with the movie. So we had access to all that stuff, I guess, before anyone else. The only real thing added, which we'll add some, this is comedy time with Rowan, is so we all pack into the theater. Ours was sold out. I was pretty nice. Late getting tickets, so we were like on aisle seats just at the end.
Were you guys like front row?
No. Like I got like a good section, but...
Oh, okay. All right. That's good.
So basically, on my screening, we had about 20 minutes of preamble. So we got the cast of Scream doing some weird competitions and like they had a body bag and they were blindfolded and they had to like put their hand in the body bag and guess what they were touching. And, you know, it would be like pizza or like, I don't know, eyeballs or like it was just like little stuff like that.
And to be clear, this was all pre-recorded. The cast of Scream were not at your theater.
They weren't hanging out with me.
Okay, just making it clear.
Yeah, no, I would charge them if they wanted to hang out with me. But, yeah, no, they weren't coming to Halifax, Nova Scotia on premiere night. But we did get a very comical, like, 2 or 3 minute sketch by the cast of Reno 911, where they basically, I'm not sure if you're familiar, Colton, but any listeners that, you know, it's a cult show. The show's always open where they're in the police headquarters, like breaking down the day. And of course, they're breaking down this serial killer murderer ghost face. And it's just okay. Reno 911 humor. It was super funny. It was kind of cool.
Also, is it called Reno 911 or Reno 911?
Because I've always heard 911. I don't know.
And calling it 911 makes it seem like a very different TV show.
Yeah, 911 maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then we also got the Demi Lovato music video at the beginning.
Oh, wow. Okay. Got you guys vibing beforehand.
Yeah, they were... Which I'm going to say up front, I wasn't a fan of because like most music videos, it's just scenes
from the movie. Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I haven't seen the movie yet. And I'm seeing scenes that aren't in the trailer. And I'm like, well, this is.
Oh, no.
This was a terrible idea. So I'll go more into the music video. But yeah, that was pretty much it. Other than if you're in Canada, I hope no one else had to watch that like 5 minute long Kids Help music video also. It was like a Kids Help phone music video by Canadian artists that I've never heard of.
I feel like I've seen that before at Cineplex, but it wasn't before Scream. It was just the Army ad, you know, where they all morph into Army people, you know, the suits come on. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
like
yeah. Where,
yeah, the camouflage gear kind of, you know, comes all over
them. This was like, what's it called? You know, the... like Michael Jackson did it, the like Children of the World or like something like that.
Yeah.
It was like this, but for kids' help phone, and it was all Canadian artists. I had no idea who they were because it doesn't say their names or anything, but it was like 4 to 5 minutes long, and everyone in the theater was just like, what the fuck is this?
Now, was that scarier than Scream 6 or
it was pretty crazy. Yeah, no, that's the end of story time. That's all that was really for the event, and then we got into the movie.
Yeah, your audience, like, what was the makeup of it? You said it was mostly sold out. Was it
We had a pretty good mixture. There was like some teenagers there, but it was a lot of, I'd say, over 20. You know, there was actually quite a few people that were probably over 40 there. I said, you know, like I always say now, Slane, I like to see there was like parents with their like 8-year-old kid there just inundating them on the Scream. So, you know, I
won't
was
push back too
that.
Much on that. I think Scream is probably one of the better ones if you are going to show kids horror, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as intense and gory most of the time. It's just a lot of like slashing literal knife stuff, right?
Yeah. And this is only rated 14. So, I mean, it's not like.
Fair enough.
This isn't like the parents that brought their kid to Infinity Pool. I can guarantee without giving spoilers, no one got jerked off in this movie. So you're pretty safe to take your kids. What was your audience like?
Mine was a lot more. God, it was literally like kids from like 12 to 16, mostly. like literally rows full of kids 12 to 16. And then I think there was just a hard jump to like 30 plus, you know, 30 to 40, I feel like. But I feel like there was only like a dozen or so of us. It was probably about 2/3 full, but it was mostly kids. They were very much snapping and TikToking the entire movie. They were recording sections of the movie to make sure they could share it on their socials and spoil it for everybody else. And a lot of Jenna Ortega stans, you know, they'd kind of squeal whenever she would be on screen. So, which didn't, you know, I prefer Jenna Ortega in these movies over some other characters. So I wasn't, you know, too angry at that. But they were respectful to the degree of like they weren't talking, I guess, but they were very much on their phones, you know, like very much attached to their phones.
We're missing out on the same. There you go. We you know, we keep going back and forth. Should we start TikTok? Let's just start spoiling movies in the theater.
Oh, my God.
We're going to TikTok the entire films.
I'm going to dance over the ending of the Scream 6. you know, I'll get shitty cam footage and we'll just do a TikTok dance over it. Rowan, we still haven't started our spoiler-free thoughts. Come on. Spit them out. What are your spoiler-free thoughts? I don't even know if you like this thing.
I will tell you, it took me a little while to form my thoughts on this. I kind of came out in a cloud.
Oh, okay.
So I was trying to decide. The first thing that I always go to, what do I go to in every movie? The first thing that stands out to me is music every time. I really actually liked the music in it. You know, I did get some of the artists. I knew the song was Demi Lovato because I had to watch the whole music video at the beginning, you know, and I know they gotta treat the younger crowd to some Billie Eilish and stuff.
Oh yeah, I caught that needle drop. I was happy there was no DJ Khaled in this one. Happy and, you know, a little bit upset. No, another one starting off the movie, DJ Khaled drop, you know?
I thought this one did the music better than 5 on the fact that most of the stuff kind of had a 90s sound, even the newer stuff. Especially the Demi Lovato thing. I was like, this kind of has the vibe of, you know, a song that would be in an original Scream movie. So I thought the music was pretty on point. I did really think that we got some good kind of like character development in this one that maybe wasn't in 5. I thought, you know, I thought our main issue with 5 was Sam.
Yeah, oof.
And I don't think it's a spoiler to say that I thought Sam was far more competent in this one than 5.
We'll agree to disagree. I still think she's easily the worst than the low point. But I mean, what I will say is that she didn't distract me as much, I guess. Like, maybe it's because I knew what I was getting in for, or maybe it's because there's a better cast of characters that are more developed and take up more of the screen time. I almost said screen time, but yeah, screen time.
Jesus. In the spoiler-free section, I'm already going hot takes. I could have took her left Ortega in this one.
Ooh. Oh, man.
I thought for sure, maybe. I didn't know what they were going to do with this character. I was a little worried coming into it, because I was kind of like, is she so big now that, you know, this is going to be a situation where, like, we need to get her out of this franchise.
Yeah.
I do like her. I like her in everything I see. I thought Sam was a stronger character in this one than her character. I thought, you know, is it because I get to see Skeet Ulrich just for a second? Maybe my attraction to him, as stated many times, clouds that judgment. But I don't know. I just thought Sam had more character, like, development, more character plots in this. I mean, obviously, you know, this franchise, we just gotta live with, this is our Sydney, is the Sam character. And then I'll also say, I won't go into what they were, but I was a big fan of all the references in this. I thought this was something that they attempted in 5 to do. I don't think they did very well, but I think they did a lot better in this, and it was very Wes Craven-y, where it was like direct nods to like people in certain movies and genres, where it wasn't just such a, I felt 5 was really like broad nods, like, oh, like here's like you horror people, where this was like, no, like you got to be this kind of horror person to get some of these references. And I thought it was just really interesting. I want to get some of your thoughts too before I keep bumbling on. What are some of your spoiler-free thoughts?
Yeah, so I think this one was exceedingly clever. I think it was more clever than the 2022 iteration, with like the criticism of like the franchises, the film bros, film school, all that sort of thing. And I thought the film looked really good. I never got really distracted by the camera work or any of the technical aspects, which is rare for a lot of horror movies. Usually I have something to complain about or pick at, but is especially rare in like the slasher subgenre, because usually, I mean, they usually look pretty grimy. They're lower budget, you know. But this thing, it definitely feels high budget, but still, in my opinion, doesn't really shed its slasher roots. There's still lots of kills and whatnot, and gore or blood to look forward to. And I thought the New York City setting worked for me. I liked a lot of it, especially, you know, the longer opening scene. I thought that was really neat. And I liked how the city shined at times. Maybe they spent a little bit too much time in apartments or in buildings to kind of not show that, but when they were on the streets of New York City, or kind of like on university campuses or in parks, I thought it really worked. I completely agree. I think the cast of characters this time is much better developed. I will still say, like, once again, that Sam is the low point, but once again, she didn't annoy me as much. I did think her screen time was like more evenly split with Jenna Ortega this time around, or like I said, some of the other supporting characters got a little bit more screen time, so it wound up just being spread out a little bit more. It basically like, well, I really don't like one character, but there's 3 or 4 other characters that I still enjoy, so it was fine. Also, for me, like, the legacy characters, the ones that are in here, they clearly got, like, diminished screen time, like, they weren't really around very much, but I kind of enjoyed that, because it allowed our new characters to shine, and when they were around, it was kind of like a garnish on, like, a good dish already. I was like, okay, yeah, cool, you're back, you got a scene or two, but, like, it wasn't, like, distractingly so. It wasn't like we're bringing in someone for the third act to put everything on its head and, like, kind of distract from the movie we were telling. So I did enjoy that. Some negatives, I'll say, is that the movie's marketing really sold that this is a different kind of ghost face. This, you know, it kept showing, like, you know, these scenes, like, him brandishing a shotgun or something like that, where I kind of left the movie feeling like this is still very much the same ghost face. I don't know if you feel the same way, but there was still loads of stabbing and clumsily chasing people and stumbling around. And, you know, most of the kills are just your basic slashing and stabbing kills. There's not really too much new there. It felt just like Ghostface. And one thing that I'll tread very carefully with is I think the movie twists and turns a little too much. And specifically, the third act gets away from it, like, almost completely. But up until that point, I was very much into everything that it was doing. So, I mean, by and large, I enjoyed this one a lot more than the 2022 one. Yeah. So would you recommend it? You kind of threw it back to me, but
people don't want to just listen to me just blabble on. So yeah. I will say I did write down like a couple cons for this. Yeah. I was also the same. Now I was totally against. I didn't even like the one scene, which isn't a spoiler because it's in the trailer. Of Ghostface with the shotgun.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, well, then we're not a slasher. Like, we're totally losing the point of this. I didn't like it in this movie at all. I think even with that scene, which I can go into more detail in the spoiler section, but I did think there were some pacing issues in this. I don't think this needed to be a 2-hour movie. I think if this was like an hour and a half, it probably would have been...
Classic Rowan. Everything needs to be shorter. Yeah.
Well, I feel like we've learned. We have like what? Like 40 years of slashers now that like that 90 minutes is like 80, 90 minutes is what you need for your slasher and you're good. I just thought there was a lot of, I did love the character building, but I did think it was a little long in the tooth and parts where I was just kind of like, is this something I really needed or I like really cared about? Now, like you, I did think the third half kind of did, you know, run away from itself.
Yeah.
I thought overall, I was a little disappointed in just the murder mystery side of this, which, you know, that's what these movies basically are, or whodunits.
Yeah, trying to figure out who the killer is.
Yeah, so. This one I think is probably the most nonsensical and just, like, thin plot. Like, there's a lot of plot holes that, stuff just didn't make sense. It wasn't logical. And I just thought, like, they really didn't focus. It seemed like they didn't focus on that part of the film. Where one of the things that was so great with Wes Craven's stuff was that, like, every beat, when you get those reveals in the end, you're like, oh, yeah, it totally makes sense that they could have done this at this time and done this stuff. Where this one, it was just like, I'm not buying half of this stuff.
Yeah, and once again, I want to tread really carefully here.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying about it.
Yeah, I think it's one that you can't really figure out the killer. Like, the movie kind of cheats a little bit, and some of the leaps in logic and the explanations for things certainly are, you know, you gotta take them or leave them. It's a bit much, for sure.
And then, really, the only other con I had, which was something I raved about loving about 5, which I feel is a very, you know, a very me thing, and probably the general public doesn't agree with me, is even though I had to look it up, I really thought the first one was rated R. And it seems when I looked it up, it wasn't. It was rated 14 also.
Okay.
But I felt like 5 was a little more brutal. It was a little more, you know, not as campy killing. Like, I remember when we talked about Dewey dying and just, like, really getting, like, the thump and the brutality and, like, even the look of the blood, like... It was, I don't even know how to describe it. I always describe it as, you know, it's not as crazy, but I call it like Rob Zombie brutality. Like, it's just like making things a little darker, a little less, you know. I always look at these Scream movies almost like comic booky. Like, they're very kind of campy, outrageous. They're self-aware, obviously. Where 5, I just felt like the kills were a little, there was a little more to them. Where I think if you really like the Scream franchise, you'll like the kills in this better, because I think the kills are more in line with what the kills are like in most of these movies, where 5, I think, deviated from that, and I actually did like that deviation. I feel like I'm one of the only ones that overly like that deviation.
Yeah, I'm wondering about your rating thing, because I just googled both, because I was sure they swore in the movie a couple of times.
Yeah, they did.
From what I googled, the MPA has both of them rated R.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if maybe it's a Canadian thing where they have it like PG-14, but like,
yeah, it must be, because I know at the theater it's 14.
Okay.
And I think I looked on IMDb or
yeah,
somewhere.
That's what I have up right now. It says rated R for, this is 2022, rated R for strong bloody violence, language throughout and sexual references. But either way, I do kind of agree that the kills in this one didn't really feel as impactful as Scream 2022. Don't think. It was just a lot of stabbing, essentially. It's what I thought.
So I will leave that by saying my recommendation. I do recommend this. I mean, Scream is here to stay. I think it is a fun time. I think you're going to have a fun time with it if you go see it. Even if you're not a huge Scream person. I mean, we've both kind of said that neither of us are. You know, I think you're pretty safe. I don't really know why, but if you didn't want to watch all the old movies, like, you could literally just watch 2022 and
then 100%. Jump on anything that you need to know, they'll explain in this movie.
I think it was a good time. I think it's worth seeing in the theater. I mean, I'm usually always gonna say that it's a horror movie in the theater, go support it, but I think it's worth your time.
I'm similarly positive, at least, in terms of giving it a recommendation. It's an easy recommendation for me. Like I said, I thought this was a significant step up from 2022, at least in my issues with 2022. I thought it had better writing, a more developed cast of characters, and like I said, I really liked the New York City setting, because it also helped kind of set it apart from the first movie. Like, it wasn't just another small town like so many slashers are. I think this is an easy recommend for me. It's my favorite thing, I'd say, that we covered on Now Slaying so far in 2023, at least. You know, there's obviously a lot left of the year, but I very much enjoyed it. So I can't wait for Scream 7, and hopefully they can actually make a killer ending next time around. That's a recommendation from both of us, I guess.
Yep.
And I think it's about time to cut to the spoiler discussion for Scream 6. We are now in the spoiler discussion for Scream 6, so if you've not seen Scream 6, it's time to tune out and come back once you've seen the movie, or keep listening if you simply don't care. I think it makes the most sense for us to start off with discussing the third act of this thing, because we were tiptoeing around it, and it seems like we both have a lot of issues with it. What do you want to start with the third act? What was your biggest issue with it?
I mean, my biggest issue with it was, so we get the reveal, Quinn, Wayne, Ethan are the killers. And, you know, from what I can think of, I was trying to think, it's been a while since I've seen, like, 3 and 4. We basically have Quinn just come back from the dead. Like, apparently it was entirely, her death is entirely
fake.
Practical
effects. They write it off that they're in film school, so they have access to these practical effects that they can use. Yeah.
The Ethan character, I had a lot of issues with in general. I thought it was just a really cheap way to have another killer, because like, he's the only character that's pretty much not developed at all.
Not
in this
at all
movie.
And he kind of comes and goes all throughout the movie. He's the very obvious choice for the Ghostface killer, and I think even what's her name, is it Mindy in the movie? Mindy even points it out, like when she's doing her big diatribe on like what you have to do to develop a franchise. I think she calls him Ghostface in that, like, very much like, basically he's like, you're the one that if this is a franchise, you would be Ghostface. And then what do you know, he's one of the Ghostfaces.
And then and then we have Wayne, you know, Detective Wayne. Which I could kind of get the callback reference now to, two, you know, we have Stu's mom is the killer, and two, you know, there's no spoilers on that. That movie's like,
I mean, they also spoil it in this movie. They literally go, you know, movie by movie of the movies we've seen and then skip the other like 5 stab entries or whatever. But they go like, based on the real killings, you know, are the movies we see.
I was kind of like, we've already done this before in this franchise. Like, you know, it just, to me, it was just weird. And then he talks about, you know, like, oh, well, you know, they, you know, I got the call about Quinn being dead. So we, you know, I replaced the body with another body. And I was just like, because no one would notice that it's not your daughter. Like, it just didn't make sense that he snuck in this body in, like, the apartment without any police noticing. It just, like we kind of said in the spoiler-free section, it just, there were so many, like, little things that just didn't make sense. They were trying to, like, build it bigger and bigger. So, like, every minute, it just got crazier and crazier. And I was just like, man, like, we get it. You can just stop here. Like, okay, these are the killers.
Yeah, it's almost like you actually have to buy into a lot more as well. Because you have to buy into the fact that they bought out this theater in New York City as a shrine to Ghostface and the Stab movies and the Scream movies, you know. And then you have to basically be led along that they're going to create this as a kill house, which, once again, it's Jenna Ortega's character that comes up with the plan, I'm pretty sure, or like Sam. It's not like one of the other characters. It's not Ghostface coming up with this plan. So it just works out really conveniently for the killers. Then we also get revealed that Kirby no longer works for the FBI and had a mental health crisis and has been gone for 2 months. But we also don't get the confirmation whether or not that's true, I don't think, unless I'm missing something. Because it comes from the detective, you know, one of the killers, but we don't know. So then I'm like wondering, like, why is that beat even in there? And then only then do we get the reveal of like, oh, it's like a Ghostface family. Like, there's three of them. And it's also like, it's not only that they're a family, it's they're a family related to Richie in the first movie. And Richie, like, obviously is a diehard fan of the Stab movies. And he's, you know, annoyingly so in the first movie. But he even had all these like homemade videos of the Stab franchise that they're like playing on an old projector as they're saying it. It sounds neat conceptually, but like you said, there's just so many like little issues that you got to buy into like two or three levels that, like I said, it's a completely, I would almost say, just bad ending reveal. I do like some aspects in that third act, but I think like the reveal of the killers and how they kind of rationalize it, you just kind of got to go like, okay, whatever, like shrug at it essentially.
I was curious, like, were you heartbroken how badly they were going at like the film bro community going on here? Like, just Richie likes to make films. He wants to, you know, he wants to be involved in film school and all this, and basically you're just a psychopath.
So I loved all of it, basically. I mean, other than when the movie like straight up just attacks me personally, like, you know, when they call out the guys that make letterbox their personality and like log everything obsessively, I don't know how they could do such a thing. I was pissed. I was, you know, clenching my fists and stomping. But I very much enjoyed a lot of it. I didn't think it was quite as hollow as the first movie. Like, it's easy to point fingers and criticize A24 movies and elevated horror. But once again, my argument with the first movie was that they were pointing fingers, but also kind of doing it themselves. Like, they were trying to elevate and make not just like this cheap hokey slasher movie, where this time it was more so kind of criticizing just the film bros and, you know, criticizing film school people and whatnot, and like basically obsessing over, well, basically almost exactly what we do. Like, they're criticizing basically the guys that love horror right in the beginning of the movie, you know.
Yeah.
And basically the whole thing is they want to finish Richie's like unfinished Scream fan film, and, you know, they're becoming killers themselves, and they got, you know, the Last Podcast on the Left poster on the wall. They got Ice Nine Kills, which is a band I listen to, that they have albums that are just wholly about like horror movies. So like, I enjoyed a lot of that, because like, obviously I'm not going out and slashing people, but it is a fun kind of rationale for a slasher movie. Yeah, I didn't think it was like as dumb as the first one. The first one felt like just dumb jabs, and like, we're gonna have a 5-minute discussion on Star Wars 7, where this felt like better informed, I guess, because like, even some of the characters were in film studies classes. The cold open with Samara Weaving being a film professor that specializes in slashers was a fun detail. I love that cold open. I know we're still kind of talking about the third act, but
no, I was gonna say, I did want to get into the cold open, because
yeah,
I was also a big, I mean, a, you know, we're so used to all these Scream movies always having some sort of like it actress as, yeah, you know, the open, and like, what a perfect casting. Samara Weaving, who, you know, it really, to me, in the last 5-6 years is like a horror icon now. Everyone in horror knows who she is. Like, she's been in Ready or Not,
I think, is what kind of blew her up, right? The Babysitter, yeah. But specifically, Ready or Not, she's worked with these filmmakers before,
yeah,
right? So it was a really cute, it's longer than a cameo, but it's a very cute kind of casting decision to bring her back. I loved her in this. Like, it was the type of thing where her character was like played so perfectly well, where obviously she has to do a bunch of over expository dialogue explaining who she is, what she does. She has to talk about slashers, but if you look at her performance of it when she's delivering all this like obviously dumb dialogue to what's the killer on the phone, which happens to be your first date, like her facial expressions and the way she's kind of like poking fun at herself, be like, oh my god, like I'm rambling on too much about this shit.
Yeah,
it was great. I loved it. And then also, once again, building up New York City as kind of a scary city with the dark alleys and lots of people, and you'd be killed right in, you know, just an alley, you know, one block away from a crowd and no one would even know, right? So I really loved the intro. It was one of the strongest points of the movie, I would say, for me, that 5 to 10 minute sequence.
Yeah, well, and not only do you get like that cold open, that kill, you basically get two cold opens.
Yes, which was so clever. Yeah,
because we get the second kill, which I thought was brilliant, that you know, the first killer being the character was Jason, but it was Tony Revolori, who, like, every kid knows if they've seen Spider-Man.
Flash from Spider-Man.
Yeah,
100%.
So, like, I thought, what a great casting, especially because once I saw him, I was like, oh, shit, this guy's going to be in the movie. I'm like, this guy's pretty, you know, like, everyone knows who he is. And so I fell for it. I was like, how did I fall for this? You know,
it's so good because once again, it's casting like a male lead that we'd all recognize, but he's not too big that it would have been like, you know, we would have saw it in the trades or people reporting on it. It was the perfect level of like a casting choice. And I loved it as well. Like having like him get murdered by the real Ghostface. It was a double fake out. And I love when Ghostface kills him. He goes, who gives a fuck about movies? And it's just like so cheesy. And it's a smash cut to like Scream 6 on the screen. Like we're literally in the 6th iteration of this fucking movie franchise. It was so good.
But yeah. And then I did say I want to bring up like some of the exact references I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I was pumped. They gave, you know, Giallo a big shout out.
Yeah.
Argento.
Sadly, I groaned. You know?
I loved it. Argento. I mean, the biggest fanboy in me was super pumped that they were watching Friday the 13th Part 8 on television, which, of course, you know, great one to watch. Jason in Manhattan.
Yeah, Jason Takes Manhattan. It's a good one.
Yeah, which, you know, I've said many times.
It's a bunch of nonsense, but, you know, it's fun. Yeah, it's a fun watch.
But, yeah, like I said, it was just the references were so more specific in this one and just really, I thought, appreciated the horror viewer watching this movie. So I really, really did appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, there was loads of references. I already mentioned, you know, last podcast on the left. I used to listen to those guys all the time and Ice Nine Kills. But there was loads of things that I saw through the movie that I never even noted now. It was just like, it was the type of thing. I don't take notes when I'm watching the movie, but I was constantly kind of going like, oh, that's cute, you know. I think even, God, I keep forgetting her name, Mindy, her big, like, diatribe about, like, franchises, she does the, you know, the quote-unquote, the Scream speech, you know, the Scream spiel, where she has to explain that they're in a horror movie and these things happen, what are the horror tropes. She kind of references a bunch of things that I can't even remember now, and a lot of her t-shirts throughout the movie are references to, like, being a strong female lead or being, like, some obscure reference, so... She's a very cool character. I did think that speech went on a little bit too long this time. It was the type of thing where I liked the evolution of it to kind of include a franchise and talk about what you have to do to keep a franchise interesting, which, I mean, probably 2, 3, and 4 probably have similar speeches. It's been a long time since I've seen them. But it did go on a little bit too long this time. But yeah, I loved all the references. I thought a lot of it was good. One thing that I kind of have to mention, especially since I'm like, you know, talking about the characters I like anyways, I do think it's a little disappointing at the end of this one that no major characters died, especially since she specifies that like everyone can be killed this time. Everyone is vulnerable, especially the two protagonists. And I was like, okay, good. We're killing off Sam at the end of this movie. I don't have to suffer for the third one.
And see, I had the opposite reaction. I was like, this is going to be Ortega's out. They're going to kill her. She's going to be like, see ya. I'm going to make like 3 more seasons a Wednesday, get that Netflix money.
I mean, she is going to make like 3 more seasons of Wednesday. I was just kind of hoping, like, I feel like the Sam character has kind of already ran its course. Like, this whole movie is essentially social media and Reddit all attacking her, essentially basically posing all these theories about how she's obviously the Woodsboro killer in the 2022 movie. And then literally, as you kind of spoiled a little bit in the spoiler-free section, Skeet Ulrich is back for very quick, you know, like probably about a minute in combined screen time. But it's very much he's trying to basically be like, yeah, take up the mantle, become a killer, which is just repeated beats from the last movie, right? So I don't know. If the next one doesn't wind up with her or Tara being the Ghostface, I literally don't know what the point of like this narrative is, because we're spending a lot of time on kind of her flirting with, oh, am I gonna become what people believe in me, and am I gonna become a killer? And then at the end of this one, it's literally like her and Tara become killers, and they're very much like slashing back against, you know, the Ghostface family at the end. So much so that that drop off of, what is it, the balcony is almost like an action set piece in a way, where it's like she slides the knife to Tara grabs the knife and does like a plunging attack on, you know, the kid below. It's like I said, it's a little bit much at times in that third act.
Yeah, and I mean, like I kind of already talked about, unlike you, I'm actually on board for Sam to continue on. I mean, I can't see this going past another movie.
They're gonna wrap it up. It'll be a trilogy for sure.
And I feel like, you know, we need a little more Skeet Ulrich. Something needs to happen. Let's just get a full haunting vibe going on, like some ghosts. Yeah, I see. I still think that maybe to subvert what we think, I still feel like maybe they'll make Ortega the killer.
Which I'm fine with it, but I think it has to be one of them. And the thing is, it's like, it's just Sam, I don't know. I really don't like the actress. I don't know. Like, I do agree that she's more fleshed out in this movie. And like I said, she didn't annoy me quite as much, but it's just like, I'm done with this whole narrative. I would have been 100% fine if she was killed. Is Jenna Ortega the best in this movie? I don't know. I'd probably still say she is. I just really like her. And in like a lot of other movies, I haven't seen Wednesday, so I'm not like a fucking stan or something, but I did really like her in what she was doing. I liked her kind of trying to keep living. You know, she was trying to do the what's it called? The horror movie thing where it's like, I'm going to ignore my trauma and I'm going to go and like keep going with my life, where like Sam is the Laurie Strode that builds an old house to attack, you know, Michael Myers 40 years later, right? Which is just like, I don't know, they're different characters. I slightly prefer the Tara. Well, not even slightly. I prefer the Tara character for sure.
I mean, if we're going to kill someone, can we just kill Gale already? Like,
yeah, I don't know what the point of keeping her was around either, because I did enjoy that her and Hayden Panettiere didn't get like a lot of screen time, because it was just kind of like, once again, they distracted and they kind of have to explain why they're here and like rationalize it with the characters. But also, it's just like Courtney Cox, this movie looked pretty pretty run down is what I'll say. I'm trying to be nice, but like I was like, bro, like
she doesn't have it anymore. It's gone.
She's taking a paycheck, right? Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, take your paycheck, but they should have killed her off in this. There's no reason for Gale Weathers to be capitalizing on another book or another film rights for the next movie, right?
Gale needs to go in the third one, so.
Yeah, speaking of that, Neve Campbell, not in this movie at all. Personally, I don't care about that decision. What about you? Do you, you know, she gets this, you get this in-world explanation that she ran away with her kids and her family to ensure they're safe. That's what you get. Sydney Prescott ran away.
This one, even though I'm not a Scream guy, I mean, it's a tough pill to swallow. I would have preferred they just didn't address it. I think it's kind of disrespectful to the character, because if anything, we know Sydney's not running away. Like,
yeah,
you know, Sydney,
especially as evidenced in the 2022 one.
Yeah, like Sydney is always, you know, a badass, just kicking ass, taking names. And I felt it was just like kind of disrespectful. Maybe they should have made an in-world joke about how they didn't want to give her the proper money, and then In the franchise explanation,
they should have had a note about like, yeah, and then the stars, they want to come back for more and more money. And, you know, they should have. Yeah, that would have been good. Some of them want executive producer credits despite being part of the franchise for 20 years, you know.
And then my last note I had on this was I just wanted to say Subway's always scary.
That was such a good scene.
Great way to have tons of different IP in your movie and not have to probably clear much. You just have these Halloween masks, and
yeah,
we got like Pinhead, Michael Myers. I think we got everyone, Voorhees, Freddy. But just it always works.
No Leprechaun, I don't think. I never saw a Leprechaun.
No, well,
so
I mean,
might have to freeze frame it.
Next time they're saving that for the big the third one they do. I think he's just going to get a full cameo. Leprechaun's going to be Ghostface. That's going to be the surprise. But yeah, I thought that scene was like the best scene, maybe out of like these two movies. I just thought it was really well done. Like I said, some ways have been scary. Predator 2 used the exact same thing, and we know Predator 2 was a banger, so...
Do we know that? Yeah, my last note is just kind of a silly thing. I do like Core 4. Core 4. It's a dumb thing. They say it in the movie multiple times. They try and make it work with, you know, a handshake and high fives and stuff. I like it. I think it's a cute thing. It very much fits the franchise. And also, I thought it was interesting. This is just another very small note. That Samara Weaving's drinking Kraken at the beginning of the movie. Because I'm not a big drinker, but if I'm going to drink some rum, I'm going to drink some Kraken. So I like that. Very quick. That was like a blink and you'll miss it. Half a second, not even. A couple frames. Yeah. But other than that, I think that's about it for my notes. Actually, I do have one. Did you stick around for the after credits scene?
So I didn't. At first, I was like, oh, maybe we should. And then, you know, we stayed till like the kind of the half credit where Ghostface slashes at the screen. And then it went into the full credits. Now I did
go. The long credits, yeah.
I did go and I read what it was because I saw people posting about it.
Yeah. I didn't stick around either. I read it, and apparently it's just Mindy staring directly at the camera saying not every movie needs a post-credit scene, which is cute and in-world for the most part.
I'm sure I'll see. I'm sure, you know, people I know that haven't seen this are going to try to drag me out to it again. So
I think that's about it for our takes, our spoiler-free section. Spoiler-free. Spoiler-filled section. So if you're new to the podcast, our review rubric is nay, okay, yay, or slay. So Rowan, what would you give Scream 6?
This is going to be a weird rating because I stated it kind of in this review where I do think I prefer 5 over this one, but I don't think it's so bad that they're pretty much on the same level. So I'm gonna give this a yay. I gave the other one a yay. I think the other one's like a stronger yay, but I think this still does what it needs to do. It was fun. I came out of it, you know, they did great marketing. I got that fucking Demi Lovato song stuck in my head now half of the day, but you know, I think it came, it was effective. It had some great scenes, like I said, the subway scene, and I even liked the ladder one. I thought the ladder scene was fun and different for a Scream movie.
Yeah, we never even talked about that, but yeah, that was fun. Yeah.
And like you said, the setting, it was cool to see this somewhere else, so not Woodsboro and not, you know, like I know in 3, it's in Hollywood, so I like to see these out of their element so we can add some other things in. And I'm not going to harp on all the, like, cons. We already said them. Like the third act, it kind of falls apart. There was definitely like a little bit of writing issues going on. I would have liked a little more brutality in this, maybe an R rating. But overall, like, I think it's a pretty good time. I think it's a pretty good release for 2023. So I will give it a yay. What about you, Colton? What would you rate Scream 6?
Yeah, where I gave the 2022 requel an okay, I'm going to give this one a strong yay. I think it's nice. I think it's very good. I very much enjoyed it. I didn't even think it was boring. I didn't think it was too long. I think the third act, once again, the reveal is awful. A lot of the action in there is still a lot of fun, a lot of slashing. Even if it strains how much people can get stabbed and slashed and still be walking around like absolutely nothing happened. Like, I think Tara, like Jenna Ortega, literally gets shanked in the back, like right at the beginning of the third act. And she doesn't even react to being shanked in the back until, like, I don't know, 10 minutes later. So it's a bit silly. You got to kind of buy into all that. So yeah, with a silly third act, I still think, in my opinion, it's a significant step up. The things they're kind of poking fun at this time worked better for me. It wasn't just like hollow, easy shots. It was like more thought out. The world itself makes sense why they're taking shots at film school. You know, their film studies professor was murdered. People in their classes are going to those classes. You know, there's film fans in their lives. Whereas the other one was just weird. Like I said, I think the movie was very well done in terms of like its budget. I thought it looked really sleek. It didn't even distract from the slasher stuff for me, despite it being so sleek, which sometimes there is like that kind of, you know, it's like, well, it's a slasher. Should it look grimy? You know, I thought it still looked really good. I enjoyed it. And like I said, I enjoyed all the characters other than Sam again. So for me, it's a very strong yay. I very much prefer this one over the 2022 one. Which I don't know if it's going to be a hot take or not. It's kind of, they're both even right now on Rotten Tomatoes. And Letterboxd, I think there's a slight uptick towards this one, but it's also a lot newer. So
yeah.
So who knows? Jury's out. But yeah, for me, I'd say this one's strong yay. I very much enjoyed it. And if you made it this far in the show and you're not following us on our socials already, you can do so at It Slays Podcast. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Slasher, Letterboxd. Basically, if there's a social media, we're there at It Slays Podcast. And if you want to help support the show financially, like our horror hounds Holly, Nicholas, Patrick, Mark, and Steven, gain access to the Patreon-exclusive show Stream Screams and get episodes of the main show 48 hours early, be sure to head on over to patreon.com/itslayspodcast and choose whatever tier works best for you. Now, Rowan, go ahead and plug the playlist.
So if you're into music from horror movies, whether that be licensed music or soundtrack score, head on over to Spotify to the It Slays Podcast Horrific Playlist. And if you have any problems finding it, you can go to the Linktree link in any of the social media and click the link to get directly to it. But we put up music from movies we review or iconic horror movies or just horror movies in general that we think you want to vibe out to. I'm sure I feel like I'm going to have to add the Demi Lovato song.
I was going
to
say, is Demi Lovato making the cut?
It's going to have to make the cut. A Scream original song. Kind of a little banger there. So it might make the cut. But yeah, go there, get your spooky music on, because why the hell not?
And next time on the show, the rest of the releases for March look pretty grim, at least on the calendar I have. I still have Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. So I don't know, if that hits VOD, maybe we'll check it out. And if not, we'll definitely be back with Renfield and Evil Dead Rise in April. So I'm not sure if anything else will be out before then. Worst comes to worst, we'll be back in April. And with that, I think that about wraps things up this episode. So until next time, I'm Colton.
I'm Rowan.
And as long as you keep listening, we'll keep slaying.